Hey, what's up, everybody? Justin Ochoa back with season 2, episode 10 of the Gym Sessions podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today we have on special guest Max Landis. I know you guys are going to love this one. Make sure you follow on social media. Make sure you give this feedback on whatever platform you're listening to. And again, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the show. Max, welcome to the show, man. Thank you for joining me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one. I was telling you before the show, I don't have an outline or any direction where this is going to go. But I know between us, we could probably figure out an hour worth of conversation with your story and your background. So it should be great.
For sure.
So let's jump right off and just, you know, get your current situation, your current status kind of out of the way. Right now, rehabbing an Achilles tear, complete rupture. How you feeling? How you doing mentally, physically? Like, where you at right now in your recovery process?
Well, I'm about 5.5 weeks out of post-op. So, you know, I'm going into like the 6-week mark where, you know, I take out another part of the heel lift. So, you know, I'm walking in a boot. Which is a good sign so far. I haven't had any complications, you know, with the Achilles tendon, the surgery. Sometimes you see like an infection or some type of complications, pretty common. And I haven't had any so far. So, so good. I mean, so far, so good, in that regard. But yeah, man, it was a tough situation. I was in Turkey at the time when I, you know, tore the Achilles, only like 12 seconds left in the game. It was a game where we were playing for points. So, you know, all like the main players were still in the game. And, you know, I shot like 5 or 6 threes within like the last couple minutes. So I was kind of tired at the time. But yeah, man, I just made the 3-pointer, just turned to go back on defense, and it just gave out on me.
Dude, it's so wild, man. I watched the film and it's like, it just looks like so like nothing. You know what I mean? Like just a freak accident. Have you watched that back? Like when I get hurt, I like to watch it and like just like callous my brain so that I don't come back scared. Like, what's your approach when it comes to stuff like that?
Yeah, like this one, I was heartbroken, man. Like it's like a move that I've done. I mean, it's like a gather step into like, you know, my little run back to defense. Yeah, man, it was hard to process at the time. Yeah, it's just like I do go back and, you know, watch it just because I think this one's going to be harder to get over than, you know, my previous two, just because it was nothing I did out of the ordinary or, you know, it was just a simple, you know, move heading back towards defense. So it's pretty tough to accept that.
So have you talked to like your doctors, surgeons, or anybody about like, so in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, there's 12 seconds left, right? What if that doesn't happen, right? Say it doesn't happen. Is it something that was like coming no matter what? Was it more of a freak? Like, did they say that there was like some type of, I guess, you know, slight tear, slight strain, anything that would have led up and that was just the breaking point? Where maybe you get subbed out, you make it through the night, you know, you go back, get some recovery in, and then you don't have to ever worry about it again. I know it's like hypothetical, but, or was there like some previous stuff that maybe had just like, that was like just the last straw?
Yeah. Like once you do it, you obviously want to figure out like why, why did this happen to me? You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I asked doctors, I asked people who've done it, you know, usually you do see like maybe a calf strain, like, you know, Kevin Durant had, or maybe some other injury in that leg. But man, I felt good. Like I felt physically, I felt, you know, I was in shape. It wasn't like I was out of shape. Like I was, you know, getting good sleep. You know, we had a tough travel day, but we got there 2 days before the game. So I was, you know, I thought I was over that situation. You know, that's why it's even harder to grasp because there's just no really, you know, excuses on or reasoning of why it happened. They haven't really given me one. So with my ACLs, it was more, you know, I kind of knew why, or, you know, I had some type of answer to the equation. But yeah, with the Achilles, man, they haven't really giving me anything.
It's crazy, man. And sometimes you don't get it. And then sometimes it's just like, it is what it is. And you have to just, you know, it's just like another part of the process, part of the journey that you've been through, part of your story. We'll get into some of the other stuff later. But I want to like shift to, you know, obviously just more a positive vibe. Like this is a small stint in your long, successful career. You've already told me and other people that, you know, you've decided you are going to come back. You know, you're going to rehab this. You're going to get back on the court next season or as soon as possible within reason. But I want to go back to like, you know, just all the things that led up to this. You had a All-American career in college. Started off at Gardner-Webb, right? And ended up at IPFW. Correct. Talk about just like your recruitment process, your college selection, you know, all the things that led up to getting you into those situations.
Yeah, so I, you know, coming out of high school, I wasn't heavily recruited by any means. You know, I had like 15 to 18 offers, Division I offers, but they were all like, to be honest with you, schools I didn't really want to go to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have any offers in Indiana at all. Like I recruited like by IPFW and IPY and, you know, Valparaiso, Evansville, schools like that. They were pretty close to offer me, but it just didn't work out. So yeah, I had like 15 to 20, 18 offers to go to places, but again, I didn't really want to go there. But so I, you know, me and my dad, we just said like, we're going to pick the best basketball situation. Mm-hmm. Chris Holman at the time, he had some Indiana ties. He went to Taylor University. He's the head coach of Ohio State now. He was at Gardner-Webb. He just got the job. And, you know, one, I knew I was going to play a lot as a freshman. So that was important to me. And then, you know, I wanted to go play for a coach that, like, I really enjoyed our relationship. So I go down to Gardner-Webb. It's 8.5 hours away from home, one stoplight town. It's a Christian school. Have to go to chapel twice a week. It's not much to do at all. It's a dry county. So you have to, you know, if you want to do stuff like drinking or, you know, having fun, Gardner-Webb's really not the place to go. But again, I enjoyed my, like, I still have like two or three of my best friends like are from Gardner-Webb. So, but it was good for me. Like I grew up, you know what I mean? Like I got out of the, you know, the indie bubble. You know, I got to experience a different type of culture. You know what I mean? When I'm down there, you know, I'm going to the barbershop and a black guy is talking about going to a rodeo. So, you know, for me, it's different. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's different. Yeah. So just going down there and experiencing new things, and it was good for me. But, you know, once, you know, if basketball didn't go well, then I wasn't happy outside of basketball. So it was really hard for me when things weren't going well for basketball. It was hard for me to really, you know, enjoy life. You know what I'm saying? So after my freshman year, I almost decided to transfer too. You know, I talked to the head coach. He kind of, you know, convinced me to stay. My sophomore year, we were actually really good. We won our division in the conference, but I didn't have a great year. I shot like 28% from the 3-point line, which is not typical for me. And you know, I just wasn't happy. And you could see it translate to me playing because I just wasn't happy off the court. Right. And a couple of my best friends were leaving the school, so I just decided to transfer back. And when I was transferring, again, I wasn't, you know, heavily recruited. I had offered to transfer to IPY. And, you know, I said I was going to be in like a 3-hour, you know, radius from Indy, from home, because I wanted to be closer to home. So I didn't have many schools, like it was like Wright State, Miami, Ohio, but they never offered me. But it was only IPY. I visited Indiana Wesleyan. You know, I talked to UIndy. And then lastly was IPFW. And the only two schools that were offering me a scholarship was IPY and Indiana Wesleyan. And I got offered a walk-on spot at IPFW. So, and then they would pay for my next 2 years, but I would have to, you know, pay to go to that school that year. And I decided to go to IPFW as a walk-on, which was crazy.
Damn, I didn't know that. That's crazy. Yeah,
so I went as a walk-on. Luckily, someone left in that process. And then I was able to, you know, get a scholarship. But that summer I was, you know, a walk-on. So yeah, I turned down an IPY offer, which like, it wasn't anything to do with the coaching staff, you know, it was just, I just, you know, I didn't want to be so close to home and just be around, you know, like I wanted to go away and then come back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I chose to go to IPFW and then just worked my butt off gaining weight, got in the weight room and, just continue to get better in my game and stuff like that. So that sitting out year was really good for me. I know that's not common nowadays, but that year was great for me. I weighed in at 155 pounds when I got there. And then towards the end, I was like 180-ish. So I gained like 25 pounds. So now I'm going into my junior year of at IPFW, my redshirt junior year. And I, you know, I have like a starting off, I struggled, you know, taking a year off basketball wasn't easy. You know, fitting into a new team with a lot of returners from the year before that. They were really good. They almost made the NCAA tournament. So it was tough, but towards the end during the conference, time, I had some big games like 28 points, you know, 19. Mm-hmm. I was very consistent towards the end of that junior year. And then going into my senior year, man, I didn't really think about playing pro basketball. I didn't really think about anything. I just was like, you know, I'm going to play my senior year and then get a good job, maybe be the GA. I didn't really even think about that past that part. And I didn't have really many expectations. Like I thought I would average like, you know, 10, 12 points a game, maybe be second team all conference or, you know, something of that nature. I just wanted to contribute to the team and I was happy. So going into my senior year, again, not many expectations. We start off the season well. I'm playing well. And we also had, you know, Mo Evans. He played at Cathedral also.
Yeah.
We were really good. And then we had John Conchar at three, who plays for the Grizzlies now. We had Brent Calhoun, who played at Warren also.
Yeah.
And then we had Joe Reed, who played at Center Grove. So we had a good group of, like, indie guys. And, you know, we were picked like sixth or seventh in the conference because we were losing so many pieces the year before. But we started off really well. And we were like 12-4 at the time, maybe going into conference. And, you know, Mo, unfortunately, was, you know, ineligible for the next semester. And at the time, he was averaging like 17 or 18 points. And I was probably around like 14 or 15. And once he went out, like, obviously that put more pressure on other people or other people, myself and other people also. And from then on, man, I would just like, I always knew I could do something like this, but I just didn't really expect it. If that makes sense. I knew I had it in me. It just took the right coach and the right system to really bring it out of me. And man, I had games where I had 44. I was 19 points per game. We were number one. We were first in the conference. Ended up being player of the year, like you said, an All-American honorable mention. And so, yeah, man, it was a wild senior year.
Yeah, so then that puts you on the map, right? And then you're like going into your, you know, post-grad career, basically like, okay, I went in this year not really knowing what to expect. Am I going to play after this, whatever?
Yeah,
now like, towards it's like you don't even have a choice.
Yeah, like towards the end of my senior year, there was like, you know, there would be some scouts, like some like the Pacers, like the Mad Ants, they would be at the games, you know. And then all of a sudden, like my coach is telling me, like, hey, like the Celtics and Magic are here. And I'm just like, man, I don't think they're looking at me. Like I'm a 6'1 white guard, mainly a shooting guard, you know. So, and then I had a bunch of agents like hitting me up, like even before the season was over. And like, I just didn't really have any. I wasn't like dead set on playing after. So I was like, man, this is cool. But like, I'm not, I don't really know if, you know, I'm going to be playing afterwards. But man, I had so much, hype around, like, you know, my shooting percentages, the amount of threes I was making. I think I was second behind Buddy Hield. We were like neck and neck at the end. And then, yeah, like I had a bunch of agents. And then afterwards, I decided on signing with Buddy Baker out of Indianapolis. And it just went from there. I had a lot of interest in Europe and ended up having 4 or 5 NBA workouts. And yeah, it was wild, man. It was a complete shock to me.
That's crazy. So during your NBA workouts, like you said, you're a 6'2" shooting guard. So like that really doesn't exist in today's NBA game. Like the last probably legit player like that would be like a JJ Redick type, you know what I mean? Where it's like you're really a star in that role, despite the size, despite like the attributes that you see in today's typical shooting guard. So during those NBA workouts, like what are they telling you?
Yeah, like most of the teams, they wanted to see if I could play point guard. So, you know, obviously I'm a combo guard. I'm because of my size. Sometimes I'm labeled as a point guard or, you know, in that area. But I'm wired to score. I don't really have a point guard feel. So they just wanted to see, you know, my agent talked to me about this. They just wanted to see how I would play as a point guard. Like I was, and how I handled pressure and how I did against length. You know, the NBA is very, you know, long wingspans, et cetera. I wouldn't say I was technically looked at as a, you know, NBA prospect. I think, you know, some of those NBA workouts, they look for, you know, like their G League teams. You know what I'm saying? Like they're focused on getting the right pieces for that, or, you know, exhibit 10s where they can, you know, sign you to the team and then send you to the G League because they have the rights to you. And also 2-way contracts and stuff like that. I think I was in that more of that range of, you know, them looking at me and for that type of position, exhibit 10s, 2-ways, et cetera. And I think the 2-ways weren't even, I don't think they even existed then. So maybe I'm just talking out of my butt, but it was a great experience. You know, I went against, you know, Pascal Siakam, many current NBA players. And it was just a good experience overall. You know, I struggled at times. It wasn't easy, you know, but man, I'll look back and always, you know, cherish those moments.
Yeah, for sure. So, after the pre-draft process or, you know, just that summer leading up, you end up going to Belgium first, right?
Yes,
correct. Which is crazy because I was looking up on your, you know, just like your stats or whatever. And Jordan Walker actually just got done playing for that team that you started your career with, which is just, it's wild how many indie guys have played on the same teams over the years, whether it be at the same time or different times. It's just like people don't realize how many hoopers really come from here.
Yeah, no, they have no idea. And it's insane. Yeah, I talked to Jordan about going before going there. Yeah, but it's, yeah, like if you're from Indy, I feel like there's so many people. Like I find like new guys, I'm looking on Eurobasket and I'm looking at like who scored a bunch of points in this game, and it's, oh, he's from Indy or he's from Indiana.
Yeah.
I was like, man,
I didn't even know he was.
So yeah, I think that having that community, it's easy to like say I'm going to another team and like I know that so-and-so played there. It's easy to get information about the club.
Yeah, for sure. So coming out, I mean, that's a solid league to start in. What was your experience that rookie year in Belgium?
It was tough. You know, coming out, like I had a lot of interest just because of my ability to shoot the basketball. And, you know, going into Europe, you know, it's a very sought after ability to have. So coming out, I had offers to go to first division Germany, you know, Italy, and, you know, some other countries like on a higher level than Belgium. But my agent was like, I don't think you're ready for that. And like, of course, like me then I was like, well, I mean, I think I am, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
going to Belgium, they wanted me to be a point guard. And I wanted to try to be a point guard just because I think that was like my, you know, I feel like I could make a lot more money being a point guard than I could being a shooting guard. Right. And you know, going into Belgium, like I just wasn't ready for European basketball, especially at the point guard position. Cause I think anyone who plays point guard knows that like in Europe, you got to pressure full court, then you're going to get pressured full court. And then you got to have a feel like, man, when I came to Europe, I couldn't even throw like a left-handed like drag pass or a hook pass. So like, you know, like, especially back then, nowadays, a lot of people work on that skill development, like throwing one-handed passes, but like back then, man, you got to jump stop and then like kick it two-handed or like if you turn it over, you're coming out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so for sure.
I couldn't even, I had a hard time reading ball screens. I had a hard time, you know, just playing the European style of basketball. So my first year was, I mean, it was bad. Like it was very bad. Like I didn't shoot it well. I just, man, the fans would clap when I was coming off the floor, not because I did a good job, but because I was coming out of the game. So, yeah, I ended up, but man, I met some great people there. Like the fans are great. Like I just wasn't playing well. And, like it's, they have a good fan base. Like Jordan might've told you that, but like, it's a good spot to start a career for sure.
Yeah. So isn't it crazy? Like thinking about that now, like where you're at, like in Porto, you're like the man, like, I mean, on the court, obviously, but bro, like Porto loves Max Landis. You know what I'm saying? Like you're big time there and you started your career getting like applauded for coming out of the game.
Like Justin, man, they had to, some of the fans that like kind of knew, like, cause I had to delete my Facebook cause I was just getting bombarded with messages and like playing at IPFW, you're not used to that. You know what I mean? If you play at Indiana or you play at a big school, you're kind of used to like, if you don't play well or you guys lose, you're used to that kind of hate on, you know, Twitter or Facebook. IPFW, man, if you win or lose, you're not having many people upset or, you know, on you after the game. So like, I wasn't prepared for that either. So like when fans started coming after me, I just like shut down. Like I didn't know how to react. Cause I've never dealt with it before. But yeah, they created a support Max Landis page on Facebook, man. It was just, the team got me a mental coach. Cause they, man, I would go in the locker room at halftime and the coach would be like, thought you were the best shooter in the USA. And I'm like, man, I'm trying to hit shots. It's not like I'm not trying to hit shots. I just can't hit a shot.
Right.
And I wasn't prepared for it. I really wasn't.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to go through it. You know what I mean? Just to figure out, because it's wild. Like, so your next move after that was to a better league, better team, better situation. So like, how did you have a bad year and still level up?
Yeah, so like after that year, it was like middle of July, I think, and I didn't have any offers, like none. And I just had twins, newborn twins. So I was, you know, I was stressing. I was like,
yeah.
You know, like what am I going to do? Do I need to get a job? And you know, I was on that borderline of quitting, honestly, because I just didn't, I couldn't mentally go through a year like that again. And you know, I didn't have great confidence at the time on, you know, my ability in Europe. I told my agent, like, I can't be a point guard. I just can't, it's just not me. I'm wired to score. I'm a shooter. Find me a coach or find me a team that's going to really play me at a combo. Like I'm going to play point guard some, but my main position is going to be the two. And I didn't have any offers. I had offers. I remember in June, I had an offer in second division Germany for like $1,500 a month. Said no to that. And then, you know, in July, this coach that offered me the year before from my college team, got a job in Gießen. And that's how I basically got my job my second year off of my college career, my senior year in college. So I got what you can say lucky in that area. But man, before that, I didn't have any offers and people were like, yo, like, how did you like, who's your agent? Like who are you with? Like, how did you, my teammates in Belgium are like, man, how'd you get to Germany? And I'm just like, I don't even know. I mean, I think it's for my senior year, but, so going into that year, I was a little bit scared to get cut. You know what I mean? I wanted to go in there and make it work. And I just had the mentality then was just like, man, like, if it doesn't work out, like, I'm just going to go in there and, you know, play my butt off and play hard. I don't, like, I just, you know, at the time I got two kids now, so I have pressure to go in there and make it work.
Yeah, for sure. Did your family come with you that year in the BBL?
Yeah, like the, Stephanie traveled with them by herself because they were born in June. I left July 30th. So they were in the, like, the time frame where they can't fly.
Yeah.
And then she came over there later on with her and her mom helped her come over there. So, yeah, they were there during that year.
Man, that's crazy. That's a lot happening at one time. So you, how many years did you play there in top league in Germany?
I played there for two seasons. Gotcha. First year, it was a good year. And then, you know, we liked it and I enjoyed the coach and man, he was big on giving people confidence. So it fit my game perfectly.
Yeah. Ultimately, when you decided to go to Porto, like what drew you to Portugal, coming off your second year in Germany, like probably had some pretty solid offers. Just kind of what was that experience like?
Yeah. So the 2 years in Germany, set me up well, just because it's like a top five league in Europe. Mm-hmm. We weren't like the worst team in the league, but we were always fighting for the playoffs and we were a good team, a respected team. And so I had going in that summer, I had, you know, quite a bit of offers for good money too. But I was telling my agent at that point, I wanted, my kids are getting, you know, around the 2 to 3 years old. And we were looking for like a home type of thing in Europe. And, you know, my kids were a little bit slower in developing their language. So it was important for me to, you know, find an English school, an English speech pathologist, somewhere Stephanie's going to be happy, my wife, a bigger city. And I was telling my agent all these things and he's like, Max, you're looking for a needle in the haystack, man. Like, I don't know if you're going to be able to, you know, find all that. So it's June, July-ish, and, you know, I'm getting offers and I'm turning them down. And he's like, you know, he's getting stressed out because he's like, Max, you're passing up all these, you know, Italy offers, Poland, to stay in Germany on different teams. And then the FC Porto coach called me directly. He didn't even talk to my agent. He called me directly and, man, I fell in love with the place just talking to him on the phone. And, you know, he's a reputable coach. My old coach was reputable. He coached the national team in Spain. And man, and we found the needle in the haystack with FC Porto for sure.
Man, that's crazy. Yeah. Your kids go to school there, right? Like pretty much home.
They're in a British school. So it's all English. And man, they love it. They got their own friends now. They're in sports. Like they're really, it's like being in the U.S. honestly. For them.
So when you got to Porto, I'm trying to kind of put the timeline together. Like when we met, your first season there, was that the off season that we met, or was it a couple years down the line?
Yes, that was the year COVID hit, 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tore my ACL in practice in like, I think it was December's area. We were, you know, 10-0, I think at the time. I was playing really well. And then, you know, I got surgery, did my rehab there for a little bit. And then when COVID hit, obviously all the Americans left. Europe, most of them. And, you know, that's how we met. You were, I can say this now, you were like the only gym open in India. Yeah.
COVID area. We had to go in the back door.
the back door. That was hilarious. But yeah, I've seen your stuff before then, you know, with John Murray and some other guys that you trained. Yeah, man, we hit it off from there.
Yeah, that was fun. Those are some fun times we had, bro. Like just Taylor, you, Ryan, like Ryan was coming back from working at like a bank or something. He wasn't even hooping. You guys just coerced him into playing. Like, bro, you're 6'5" and you shoot 40% from the three. You need to be playing.
Exactly, man. Those times we were going there like 6 a.m., 7 a.m., because we had to go there early because Ryan had to go to work.
Yeah. Right.
And man, he was so out of shape, but man, like we were just drilling him on how, like, dude, you gotta, like, you're 6'6", you're 20, what, at 6 at the time, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So
I love it. And now he's still playing in Portugal, right?
Yeah, he's he played in France, and then I hooked him up with my agent, and then he signed in Portugal. He's been playing in Portugal the last 2 years, so it's been cool to see his little comeback.
That's dope, man. So that was good, man. We got some good training in. We've been like on and off over the years, you know what I mean? Like, I know your schedule is crazy, but you've had like a streak, not consecutively, but you've hit some road bumps, but kind of like we started off talking about with the Achilles, but ended up tearing your other ACL, and then a couple years later, I think, this Achilles. Where do you go, like, mentally when some of this stuff happens and you just, like, you got to get back, you know what I mean? Because I think a lot of times, like, people who go through these, you've done the two most severe injuries, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, it hasn't killed you. Like, this will kill a lot of people. How do you get back? Like, what's your mindset? Like, what's your, the mental part of this stuff?
Yeah, I think, man, the first ACL, it was kind of like, you know, I was still younger and, you know, I've been through some, I had two knee surgeries before that, but they were minor ones, just, you know, scopes. But mentally, I never had any, and I always knew I was going to come back after the first one. The second one, it was tough because, again, I was playing, you know, my best basketball. I was even playing better than I was before the, you know, first ACL. That one was really tough mentally, you know, and I'm not like some Superman where I just, oh, I'm going to come back. I'm going to be better than what I was before. No, I have doubts. Like I have, I have doubts of like, should I keep playing? Should I quit? I do need my bike. I don't want to just, you know, not be able to move when I get older. You know, those thoughts come up, you know, every now and then, but you know, I always try to put stuff into perspective, you know, and I gotta be honest. I've been in a club where they do love me and they do care about me as a person and not just an athlete. So I've been you know, lucky in that regard. Like some guys, when they get injured, man, those teams are just like, you're out. Like you go get,
yeah, they'll send you home.
You can figure out where you're going to get surgery in the States. And, you know, I've been lucky and fortunately, I've had, you know, contracts for years after my injuries where like I was comfortable getting rehab. You know what I mean? Not everyone has that luxury, you know what I'm saying? And I think it might've been differently. Say I didn't have a contract the next year and I tore my ACL. It would have been tough to have that motivation to keep working. But mentally I've come a long way mentally too. I've had my struggles for sure on playing and fear of injury and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, that's a real thing. I know we joked, like it's not funny, but at the time you were like, man, why the fuck was I driving to the lane? Like, who do I think I am? Like, I need to be shooting three. do you find like some of the humor in it? Like, obviously it's not something to be taken lightly, but do you try to find like positive stuff and just kind of, you know, get through it that way?
Yeah, like that. My second ACL, like I had like at least three people wide open, and I'm just like driving in there like a psycho. You know what I mean? And it's just like that's who I am, though. Like I'm, like I've always had to play like extra hard because I'm not the biggest, I'm not the strongest. Like, you know what I mean? So like, I was brought up as like you got to play with your chip on your shoulder all the time, and like that's gotten, you know, that's gotten me in trouble at times. So yeah, like. You know, I find some humor in it. Like I tell like our physical trainers now, like, oh man, they need to hang my jersey up in the training room. You know what I mean?
Like, medical staff.
Yeah, like, or like I can be a physical trainer after this, or a knee specialist. It's just I try to find humor in it. But yeah, it's tough at times.
Yeah, I already know, man. I've the injury stuff is tough because it's like you, like life has to go on. You know what I mean? But you're also like struggling and mentally and physically that whole time. And you know, you've been lucky enough to, I shouldn't say lucky, you've earned the fact that you've been re-signed by the same team multiple times. And they, like you said, they take good care of you. You're on a 2-year deal now, I believe, right? So you're signed throughout, what, 2025 or something like that?
Yes, 2025.
That's what's up. So what's your, we'll go back to kind of like how we started, you know, the Achilles rehab. What's your goal, like your timeline? Do you want to play at the start of next season? Or are you kind of just like, I'm just going to be ready when I'm ready? Hey guys, taking a quick break from the show to give a special shout out and a thank you to the sponsor of today's episode, which is Vitruve. Now, if you've ever been in my gym, you train with me, or you visited the gym, you see this attached to every single bar. Vitruve is the gold standard for VBT units, in my opinion. Accurate, reliable data. We're attaching it to every single lift that we do. We're getting bar speed metrics, power, force, range of motion. We're able to consolidate all that data, manage it, and then help our athletes get the most precise results possible. So again, Vitruve, second to none. I stand by it. They are a friend of the show, so they're letting you guys get 10% off of your orders by using the code GEMS, that's G-E-M-S, at vitruve.fit. That's their website. I would encourage you to get on there, look at the products, look at the research that goes into their products, look at their product education. And if you like what you see, tap in, right? If you had any questions, tap in with me. I've been using Vitruve for years now, so I'm very well versed on how to implement this into a program. Again, 10% off with the code GEMS. And in my opinion, best VBT unit on the market from reliability, accuracy, customer support is A1. Their education on their product is A1. I cannot recommend them enough. Vitruve.fit. 10% off, code GEMS. Now back to the show.
Yeah, like, you know, it's the stuff with like Aaron Rodgers and
that's situations crazy.
Like that. It kind of gives a little bit of false reality on like people, yeah. Like I see like the comments on, you know, the Instagram page when he's like dropping back and throwing a football. And people are like, oh, his shoulder's not injured. But people don't realize how hard it is to even get in a shoe at the 1 month range he was at, or walking without crutches. Like he's doing the most in that. Like I want to be like kind of in between aggressive and also caution at the same time. You know, we have a goal of, you know, coming back this season. I don't know if, you know, it would be around like the April, May-ish part. Playoffs is like the end of May and June. But, you know, it depends on a lot of things. It depends if I feel good, if the team needs me, if, you know, we can only play 5 Americans. And at that time, we'll have 7. So, like, in the Portuguese league, we need your Americans to play 30 minutes. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to be that. You know, right. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm. But, you know, I don't want to jeopardize my health, and I don't want to go out there for the club also if I'm not ready. So
yeah,
I've tried to like, I want to be aggressive. You know, I'm doing blood flow restriction. I'm doing rehab every single day, therapy every single day. I'm doing the hyperbaric chamber. Like I'm red light therapy. Like I'm doing every avenue to try and come back as fast as I can. But I also want to be smart at the same time.
Yeah. You want to be like yourself when you come back, like, coming back faster and not being who you know you are is like sometimes worse than coming back double the time and coming back and being legit, like back to what I was doing before.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you do come back too early and you're not yourself, then you start second guessing your ability. Yeah. Or if I'm like, am I ever going to be the same? Or so I think you have to really be patient and try to come back when you do feel like yourself. Obviously, yeah, you're not going to be 100%, but you don't want to be, you know, 60% and go out there and just look like a fool. So
the other thing about Aaron Rodgers is like, and I hope this doesn't happen, I don't want to like put this out there, but like when you publicize kind of like, you know, your rehab and your things that you're doing that are outside of the norm, it also leaves you kind of vulnerable to, like, if things go wrong, they go back and be like, well, yeah, look at him. He was doing this 4 weeks after his surgery. He was throwing a football. And so it could either make you look like the man or it can make you look like a clown, because it's all public, kind of public form. You're putting it out there. And, you know, if it doesn't go right, you got to accept that.
Yeah. And another thing I didn't like about is, you know, no shade to Aaron Rodgers, but he said it's all about his mentality towards, or like his mind towards the injury. And I'm like, okay, you're getting the best quality of treatment.
Yeah.
You're the best doctors, the best surgeon. Like, don't just say it's all based off your mentality and
right.
how hard you know what I mean? You got other yeah. outside circumstances that are making this go maybe a little bit faster than usual.
Oh, 100%.
And he's aggressive to where, like, they're going to make sure he doesn't mess up the tendon. You know what I mean? Like, he's always talking about stressing it, but not stretching it, which, you know, makes sense. So he has, like, you know, he just has so many different circumstances that an ordinary person doesn't get. Yeah. So I didn't really like how he said, you know, mentally, I'm just attacking this way different than anyone else.
Yeah. He's making it seem like just anybody can do it. It's like,
yeah, exactly. Bro, come on. Yeah,
it's like, no. You got access to stuff that, you know, and if I honestly, like, if I were him, and I'm sure that he is, he's probably taking some type of PEDs, like, to be honest, that, you know, may be a loophole or out of his system by the time he gets done testing. Like, cause bro, I've had, like, they're legal. You know what I mean? They're doctor prescribed. It's just like, does your sport allow it or not? And so I would guarantee, bro, that he is taking some type of peptides or some type of, like,
yeah,
like supplements or stuff like that. That's toeing the line.
The whole process with him is it's crazy. Like, people don't realize how hard it is to do some of the things he's doing this early, and it's just out of the ordinary.
When have you ever watched, like, the Kobe Achilles tear? How yes, he no. like walked to the free throw line and shot?
Oh yeah, so, I've watched it twice now since my injury. So.
So here's the thing, like, I love that. It's a classic moment, but, like, do you ever think about, like, why he shot free throws? Like, he didn't get fouled. Next time you watch it, just look, like, where's the foul? And I'm like, bro, he did not get fouled. He just blew out his Achilles and fell, and they called a foul on Harrison Barnes.
Like,
Harrison Barnes is like, what the fuck? There's no foul. Hey, there's no Kobe contact, bro.
If Kobe – another thing I've – Another point about that little video, I need to go watch that for sure. About there's no foul, because no one pays attention to that, because you just focus on him holding his Achilles.
Yeah.
Another thing too is when he's walking off the floor, like, his teammates look terrified of him. Like, they don't, like, you know, I had teammates coming to help me out, like, you know, pick me up.
Yeah.
So but, like, them dudes were just, like, looking at him like this, and he was just walking off like a madman. Like, them dudes were terrified of Kobe.
Yeah, I did read some stuff. Now, Kobe talking about his mentality, I think, is a little bit more, like, usable than, like, an Aaron Rodgers. But he was saying, it was either him or his doctor or trainer or somebody, saying the reason he shot the free throw was, like, that was, like, the day one of his rehab. He was like, I want to get back to the free throw line. So if I shoot this, that's going to help me, like, remember, like, what I want to get back to. He was like, that was the first day of my rehab before surgery, before anything. He was like, that locked me in to get back, because he was kind of older too. You know, he could have walked away. He was like, you know, yeah, what I mean, solidified one of the GOATs. Like, so I thought that was cool, just a little mentality thing, you know, just saying, like, you know, even if he misses it, even if he tries and it just buckles, at least he went up there and was like, this is what I want to get back to. So this is why I got my mind set on.
Yeah, for sure. And watching that documentary, you know, like, Kobe's like that. Like, he's mentally a freak, man. He just work. And, you know, what's funny is that Aaron Rodgers and him actually have the same surgeon. So, but Kobe actually came back, I think, around like eight months. And that was early for that time period. You know, some now are like 6 months. You know, you see some football players coming back. But yeah, man, watching those documentaries always, you know, helps me mentally too, and, you know, get motivated and start to work at the process.
Yeah. So let's talk about just like the season up to that point, and even last season, playing some of your best ball, shooting deep threes, like deep threes. Where is your, like, so your development, I would say, like, you're old school, you know what I mean? You're like a hard-nosed guy, work ethic there, chip on your shoulder. Like, how did you develop that jump shot over the years, especially like as a younger kid?
Yeah, I think just growing up, like, my dad was very involved in my development growing up. I started playing AAU at like second grade, and back then that was like unheard of. Nowadays it's, you know, they got rankings.
Yeah, now they got rankings for second grade.
So I started playing with Red Taylor. He used to be like the Municipal Gardens, like the kind of the runner of that. And like back in the day, like he always had like the best kids. You know, he won like 20 something national championships. So he was a big influence on me at the beginning. My dad loves to hoop. He still hoops like right now. He travels and like plays in AAU tournaments for like 60.
That's awesome. Yeah, I need that.
Yeah exactly. So he's very involved in hoops. So he used to go play, you know, open gyms at Perry Meridian High School at 6 a.m. And I would always go. So, you know, waking up at 6 a.m., he would play, and then afterwards I would shoot, or, you know, they let me play maybe like the last couple of games when no one wants to play anymore. So just growing up in the gym, and then, man, like in high school, the shooting machine came out, the gun. Perry got one, and man, I would, me and my dad would go over there almost every single night until the janitor told us, like, yo, it's time to leave. So just growing up, I would just, you know, he fixed my shot. Like a shot was never perfect. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I worked out with, you know, Chris Thomas, 100% hoops, and just, you know, just my development. My dad really had a big influence on me growing up, and, you know, my shooting ability kind of came from that.
So going back to like your jump shot mechanics, like what are some of your principles that you want out of your jumper?
Like, I think not putting the ball like in front of your face. Like I feel like the shooting motion should never cross your, you know, everyone has their own like shooting mechanics.
Yeah.
I'm not big on like changing the whole shot. Like I like, you know, I have some people that ask me like for advice, and I, you know, just small tweaks, like making sure your arm's extended. You know, some people like their arm is like this when they fall through, you know, falling throughing high instead of just straight out, so the shot is, you know, it has a little bit more arc. And there's a lot of tools nowadays. I think there's a machine that like can track your arc or whatever. And you know, I think everyone has their own, you know, shot. I just think it's based off reps, and I'm big on game shots too. I'm not big on like, you know, you see, you know, some people say, oh, let's get 1,000 shots up today. Like, I'm not big on that. You know what I mean? Like, you need to have, like, I'm good with like 10 to 15 of the shots that you take in games, do them full speed, and I feel like it will translate to the game.
100%. I agree. Yeah. I've been like looking, like studying people's jump shots and stuff, and you definitely have yours. Like, you know what I mean? It never crosses your face. Mine, I kind of come across the middle like that.
Yeah.
But was that natural for you? Like now at this point in my life, like I could never change. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that natural?
I do think there's a time where like, okay, we're not changing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for some people like try to totally just change a shot, and it's just like, man, you're just wasting time because it'll take forever. But yeah, like I used to bring it from my hip because I wasn't strong enough. I used to bring it to my hip and then come across. But, you know, my dad, because, you know, you see how Jordan Holes used to shoot, right? Like kind of like all the way cocked to the side.
And I kind of,
you know, me and my dad, we'd always like kind of study like Ray Allen, Reggie Miller, you know, shooters like that. And, you know, watching Jordan play, I think I was in high school, but I was young, but watching him play, and his shot would never come across his face. So like, me and my dad were always like, okay, we need to move your shot a little bit to the right. And, you know, I kind of kept that throughout my college career and pro career.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. Last thing I got for you before I let you get out of here, we got quick hitters, just some rapid fire Q&A here. You can go in as in depth as you want on these answers, or you can make one word answer. So first one, I want you to say something in Portuguese, but don't tell me what it means.
For this.
All right. I'm going to look it up later or let the fans tell me. What's the best NBA comparison that you would have for yourself? Past or present?
Past or present. I like to compare myself to a little bit of Jimmy Fredette.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I can see that. All-time favorite movie?
I'm a big Remember the Titans fan.
Yeah, that's a classic. Favorite vacation spot?
I would say Miami, since I'm Cuban, so.
Cuban, yeah.
Yeah, so it's you feel at home there.
For sure. What's your favorite hoop shoe of all time?
Favorite hoop shoe? You know, the new wave now is Kobe's. I did like the Kobe's back then. I would go with, I like the Durants. I don't know which number they were, but man, I wore them in college with the strap that went over the top.
Oh, the fours.
The fours.
That's top five shoe of all time right there. Those are fire.
You there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Are you there?
We good? Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. What's an award that you felt like you deserved that you didn't win? Doesn't even have to be sports, just any accolade.
I thought I should have been an Indiana All-Star, but that, I mean, I even missed school after that was announced, the next 2 days, I didn't even go to school because I was so upset about it. But yeah, that's something I wish I would have made back in the day.
That's crazy, bro. Kelsey, on the last episode, Kelsey Barlow said he wasn't Indiana All-Star either.
Yeah, that's like, crazy. And he was going to
Purdue. That's crazy. They miss a lot.
They do miss a lot.
We're not getting into that. All right, build your perfect pizza.
Perfect pizza. I'm a big barbecue chicken pizza. So,
okay.
Barbecue sauce, some chicken, some peppers.
Pineapple go on there or no?
Yeah, you can add some pineapple to that.
Oh, so you're a pineapple on pizza guy.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not big on it, but like if you want to add it, I mean, you can add a few, you know, little pieces of pineapple.
Couple chunks.
Yeah.
That's how my wife is. I don't like it, but I respect people's, you know what I'm saying, their freedom. If you didn't hoop, what do you think you would do for a living?
I think I would just be a typical business guy. I don't think, maybe in sales, maybe something like that. I don't think I can't sit in the office all day.
Yeah.
But something on the move, something competitive, something that can bring that out of me.
Yep. What's one food you could eat every day? Regardless if it had like health implications or not.
I'm an acai guy. Acai bowls. I could eat those.
Bro, I've been getting on those lately. Is that like a big thing in Portugal?
Oh, yeah, because it's from Brazil. So like Brazilian and Portuguese, like they are elite out here. Elite.
I got a couple spots here. There's probably not, you know, comparable.
Yeah, like I had one in Smoothie King in the summer, and I'm like, oh, this is terrible.
Gross.
But there's a spot in on Mass Ave that's good. That actually has a solid acai spot.
There's one called Clean Eats, I think. It's like a Tim Tebow's franchise, and they got the bowls, and then they also have food too. Got some little like paninis and shit like that. So it's pretty good.
If you came to Portugal, acai bowl will change your life for sure.
Damn. What's the most embarrassing basketball story that you can remember?
I went my first game in conference as a freshman. I was 0-for, I think 10 or 12 from the 3-point line. And just as a freshman, Yeah. You just keep letting them fly. And it's just like, man. And then I go to shoot a technical free throw and I miss that. And it's just like, that was like my wake up call, man. I was so embarrassed. And I was like, man, this is like, it just took me a while to get over that one.
Bad shooting night. So this isn't on the list, but I recently heard, I can't remember who was saying, but like there was a parent who was saying something about, they heard if you're 0 for 5, I'd rather you go 0 for 10 because that means that you didn't lose confidence and you kept shooting. And the other parent was arguing about it. Like, where do you land on that scale? Because you actually did it. Like they say, you know, it's better to not stop shooting and have a worse night versus like start to doing other things.
Yeah, I think you have to have like a – I think if you like, you got to keep shooting, obviously, but like,
yeah.
I feel like you can, you got to reel it in it too. Sometimes you can't just be coming off, you know, stagger and just letting it fly. If you're over 10, you know what I mean? If you're open, you're open.
Yeah.
I feel like I've done a better job at like trying to do other things too, like getting my teammates involved. Maybe it's just spacing on the floor. Cause like no one's going to, even if I'm 0 for 9, no one's just going to leave me wide open. You know
right.
Cause it takes one shot to get you going.
Then you're back.
So I'm big on like, I always want to give, you know, my teammates confidence. They're having a hard time giving them confidence, but also you got to like know, you got to have a feel. You get what I'm saying?
Yep. In fifth grade, what did you want to do when you were older? Like, what was your dream job?
I've been all about basketball. So I would say like being a pro basketball player, but that's the easy answer. But I just always wanted to, I like helping people. So maybe like, you know, I always thought about being like in management in a basketball team or,
yeah,
you know, and kind of in that regard, maybe not coaching. I don't know if coaching is it, but maybe like in a management role of a sports team.
For sure. Last one right here. Heavy hitter, Mount Rushmore, NBA players. These are your favorites, not necessarily like who you think is like the GOAT or whatever.
Just like top five or?
Top four.
Top four. Mount Rushmore. Okay, I got you. I'm going LeBron. I'm going Shaq. Not in any order. LeBron, obviously Jordan. Yep. And I'm going to go with Steph Curry.
I love that. Steph Curry, definitely. He's definitely on mine. He's changed the game.
Yeah, he's changed the game, and I'm tired of people saying like he's not. Hey, it's 1A, 1B with him and Magic. Like, there's no.
Oh yeah, he's insane.
Yeah, like there's no. I think he's top 10 all time. Like, I think he's like, just people just don't give him enough credit just because I just think they. I don't know. He always gets a little hate for some reason. I don't know why, but
I don't know why either. It's very odd to me.
Yeah, like, I don't know, it's just because he's like considered just a shooter or like,
right?
I don't know, man. It's just, but you gotta, the stuff he does is unbelievable. And no one's ever done that before. Like, no one's ever taken the shots he's taken. No one's ever, you know, he's been winning. It's not like he's been on a bad team. Yeah. Either, so, yep. Yeah, he's up there for sure.
MJ, Bron, Shaq, and Steph. That's a tough four to beat right there. That's what's up, man. So that's all I got for you today. Before I let you get out of here, tell the people kind of where they can find you, what your social media handles are, and that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. It's both just my name, Max Landis. So you can find me on there. My Twitter sometimes can be a little wild just because of the Portuguese fan base.
Rivalry. That's so awesome.
But thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, man. Great catching up with you. I wish you a speedy recovery. Can't wait to see you back out there on the court, bro.
I bet. Thank you, man.
And that was another episode of the Gym Sessions podcast. Thank you to Max for joining us. And thank you to you for tuning in. I appreciate the support. If you're new here, definitely go back to some of our previous episodes. We've been having on great conversations with pro hoopers throughout season 2. If you're a returning listener, continual supporter, thank you so much for your support. This show continues to grow because of you guys. So if you can do me a favor before you go, make sure you leave this feedback, review it, rate it, whatever you got to do. Help us continue to grow the show. We'll see you guys next week with episode 11 of season 2. Thanks.